And it's midnight all around. Still the trees glow.
I would like to introduce my guest, Jeff Opkrepke of Coffee Strong.
Hi.
It's been a few months since we last spoke, so I thought it would be good to give our listeners an update on what's happened in Coffee Park and see how things are hopefully progressing there. Perhaps you can give maybe a brief description of what happened to you and at that time, almost a year ago, and then come up to maybe your own personal, what's been happening for you personally in that, the rebuild and everything. And then we can go to the bigger picture, perhaps.
Yeah, sure. I lived in Coffee Park, on the north side of Coffee Park. I, like thousands of my neighbors, lost my home during the Tubbs fire. Me, my wife, my son, and our two dogs that escaped with barely anything, some photo albums and some clothes, one duffel bag, worth of clothes for the three of us. And in the weeks and months after, I saw a need that I thought I could hopefully fill, and that was a person to help organize the community, the neighborhood, to help with basically becoming a informational and a advocate. Advocacy organization for the people in Coffee Park that we're rebuilding. And so we've done some, you know, in my personal opinion, some pretty tremendous things as far as organizing. We officially been registered as a 501c3 nonprofit. We have a board of directors, executive officers, and we're undertaking some very large projects within the community. And we've been, this whole time between then and now, informing the residents of various pieces of information that they need. And that's everything from, you know, building to PG&E, trenching to what's going on with the park, stuff like that. And we've been kind of a clearinghouse for information, both going up and down, up from the residents and then down from the city and county and state to our residents, and just try to keep everybody informed so that they can rebuild as quickly, as cost efficiently, and with as little stress as possible.
Well, that's it. You've really, all of you have had to hit the ground running in terms of just learning a tremendous amount, I imagine, of rules and regulations of all the different authorities. That must, just that in itself must be an incredible headache.
Yeah, it's almost like having a part-time job. it is like having a part-time job. It's almost like having a full-time job, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
For everybody to learn these things, you know, a lot of these individuals who own these homes, if they were the original owners, they bought out of a footprint out of a catalog, a floor plan out of a catalog, and said, "I want this kind of a house," and given options of, you know, what street it would be on, and they chose their finishes, cabinets and stuff like that, or they bought a house like anybody else would in the traditional sense, and what ended up happening was they became a group of people that were building over 1,300 custom homes because of this fire. So they had to go through the process of learning everything that they never had to learn before. Everything from soils to construction types to foundation types, insurance, grading, all those kind of things. They had to educate themselves on just so that they could rebuild what they had before. They never had to do that.
Exactly. Thank goodness for the internet, I suppose.
Yeah, internet and friends and lawyers and whoever else you can get to give you free advice.
Exactly. Now, how many buildings were destroyed in Coffee Park?
The most accurate number that I know of is right about 1,350.
Wow.
You'll see different numbers varying, but I don't know if anybody really knows. I don't think anybody's ever taken a map and counted by hand how many exactly it was, but we think it's roughly 1,350.
Yeah, that's a big chunk, isn't it? Those don't just mushroom up overnight in the best of circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the process, obviously, a lot of people we've been hearing about have just sort of shrugged their shoulders and said, okay, I'm just going to sell my lot, get out of here, and I don't want to mess with it. Do you know what percentage has happened in Coffee Park?
Yeah, we don't know the exact number because it's constantly changing. You know, we internally within our organization, and I know the city and a couple of other places refer to them as waves. There's different waves of people that choose to move on, and it all depends, you know, depending on certain situations, personal situations. So, you know, the first wave of people that we saw leave was the ones that had already had a plan to downsize or a goal to downsize or move on to Iowa to be with their kids, kind of a thing. And then the fire happened, and it just kind of made the decision for them or expedited that process. Those happened in the very first few months. Then after that, it was a combination of a few things. You're starting to see people that did the second wave at the beginning was mostly just people that didn't have the emotional bandwidth to deal with it. So as we just discussed, there's a huge process that goes into this, and it's not just building a house. It's rebuilding your home, which, you know, there's a lot of emotion involved in that. There's a lot of just personal feelings of sadness and just pain that these individuals go through when they discuss their house and what their footprint used to look like and what used to be in there and what they used to have. And they just couldn't do that. They didn't have the emotional bandwidth or the desire to go through that. Right. And they just said, I'm done and we're moving on. And you see that we're talking about people that may have moved to the other side of Santa Rosa, even, or just a couple blocks away, bought a house. They just don't want to deal with a rebuilding.
Yeah.
And then there's the insurance wave, which is the individuals who are underinsured or maybe even uninsured and can't find a way to find the gap financing in order to rebuild to a significant level of home for those lots, and so they find it better to just sell their lot, take what insurance they can, and go find something more affordable.
And that's hard, you know, obviously with the fires up north now, you know, everyone's getting squeezed, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of things going on. When you say a tough squeeze, I mean, it could mean a lot of things. It could mean a squeeze on the housing market. It could mean a squeeze on resources in terms of building and it can, you know, mean a squeeze on insurance and the rates and availability of that insurance. So, it's getting pretty hairy out there.
Have you what's been happening on the insurance side? Have they been accommodating, or you know, it seemed like originally they were fairly accommodating, or is it getting down to the brass tacks and it's not so good?
It's up to the individual scenario, which is unfortunate because. You have people that are still fighting, that still feel like they're not being given what they're owed. And, you know, a good majority of those are ones that are fighting because they believe that they were communicated something by their agent or by their insurance company that is contrary to what the insurance company is saying. So, you know, it's kind of weird to think that you could be arguing over the term replacement cost. You know, that's a key term within insurance, is replacement cost. Now, is it guaranteed replacement cost, or
it's a lot of definitions in that? Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of the old 1990s Bill Clinton quote. It depends on what your definition of is, and you know, you think of something where it's like, oh, it's replacement cost. You know, the layman would say that replacement cost means you get the money to make back what you had before to replace it, and it's like that's not exactly true for certain individuals, and so that's the fight that's going back and forth.
Well, going back to your previous point, I know there's been some services for like mental health for the people who have been affected by this. I think some money was given fairly recently. Has that been of any use on that side of the ledger?
You know, it's the one thing. There's always been this stigma about mental health, and even in a situation like this where you want to have these resources available to everybody and people to be open and honest about what their needs in terms of mental health are. There's still people that hide it and don't want to talk about it. You know, there's individuals that still can't cope, and it's a difficult situation for them, and they need help, and they need to talk to somebody, but they won't, or they haven't, and you can't force somebody to get something like that. That's the other issue. We call them late bloomers or delayed starts, and what we mean by that are people that are in a situation where they didn't get started in the process of talking to contractors or what have you for quite some time, and because they couldn't deal with it. You know, they haven't given up yet. They haven't written it completely off, but they haven't gone forward at all. And it's one of those things where you wish that they could, that if they're not talking to somebody, that they would go and talk to somebody and would get that help, because it would help them at least make a decision of what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But I think that's the silent issue that we can't really define or quantify is, you know, what are the needs in terms of the mental health aspect, because there's not a lot of people really willing to talk about it.
Yeah. Whew, yeah, and that has so many repercussions. It's just, it goes so beyond just the rebuild.
Absolutely.
You know, and well, that goes, I suppose, to the next factor of communications is, okay, you're starting to rebuild and getting back there. How will the emergency servicing of, say, Coffee Park change compared to what it was before? What do you need? What now, after you've been through that, what are the needs to make people, to feel safe where they live?
You know, that's a million-dollar question. I know that those assessments are ongoing, that there's, the government at the state, county, and city level, those discussions are being had about what they can do, but it's one of those things where you can speculate and assume, but you're not really going to know until it comes down to it, and it's actually needed in a real world scenario.
Right.
So there's the big discussion point, which is the text alert system.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge point of discussion because of the lack of use of it, and I know they're trying to narrow that, but there's other things that they're doing. I know that, they've given PG&E the authority to shut down the power grid in high wind situations. On red flag day warnings, they've schemed to strategically place fire department personnel in key areas to help mitigate that stuff. But it's one of those things where you kind of look at it and you're like, you think you have all these answers and everything, and then, you see clips like from the car fire, that fire tornado, and you think to yourself, well, nothing's going to stop that. So
yeah,
that's, like I said, it's the million-dollar question is, what can we do? And if what we come up with is actually effective.
That's the thing, isn't it? During the fires, people like CALS and KSRO and KRCB, they, on the broadcast, they were the only thing out there, because cell phone service and Wi-Fi had gone. That was the last defense, was just turning on the radio, wasn't it, for those precious hours. I think it showed a lot of vulnerability on many levels. I mean, the discussion about sirens, just a simple siren, I know a lot of people are for.
I mean, my personal opinion is I'm not a proponent of that for a couple of reasons. The first being, basically, when you look at sirens as an early warning system, they're primarily used for tornadoes. And what you do is when in a tornado scenario, when you hear the siren, is you go into a root cellar or a basement or closet indoors or a bathroom. Unfortunately, those aren't the scenarios we're going to come into. If it was an earthquake, I mean, maybe, but you don't have forewarning for an earthquake. What we're talking about is something that needs to be directional. You know, if you have a fire in, I don't know, we'll say Annandale, and the sirens go off, and you hear it in Fountain Grove or you hear it in other parts of the area, it's not directional. So you don't know which way you should evacuate. So if you're in one of the valleys, if you're like Bennett Valley, you don't know what side it's coming from, so you don't know where to go. You just hear a siren that something's wrong, so you could evacuate to the wrong area. Or if you have an evacuation plan and you say, hey, when you hear the siren, it's for wildfires. Everybody will use the east side again. And say, everybody go to Kurt Slater or Montgomery High School or something like that. Well, if the sirens go off because the dam breaks up at like Spring Lake or something like that, or Lake Ralphine, and it floods through that area, well, if you're all camped out there at that spot, then you're actually right in the path of it. So that's the big thing for me, is it's non-directional. There's no description of what you should do if you hear those, because you don't know where you're supposed to go. But I definitely think there's an early warning system that needs to be had. I mean,
yeah.
The text alerts, I think, is the best thing we're going to be able to get down to get to where you can ping certain cell towers to get certain alerts out, not just like Nixle alerts, but like an alert where, you know, it sends that Amber Alert kind of sound.
Oh, yes.
Say, fire in Fountain Grove moving west, evacuate towards whichever area. And then people go, oh, I'm supposed to go here. But
yeah, it could be, you know, so much confusion.
2020 that, you know,
That's the thing, isn't it? There's no one perfect system, obviously, because you're dealing with an unknown. You don't know which way the fire's going to go, what ferocity, or anything. It's just juggling a lot of resources, isn't it? And information.
And then the second thing, you know, I mean, when you talk about sirens, is sound carries. So if you, we'll say there's a fire in Fountain Grove and the sirens go off, but you're in, we'll say, downtown, but you can hear it from there, right? The downtown area might start evacuating and cause a bigger traffic jam or backup for the people trying to get out of Fountain Grove,
right,
as an example. That's why I'm more of a proponent for the text notification or something similar to that can actually be directional, specifically used direction, than I am for just overall sirens.
Right, just in the blanket thing, yeah. You've done a number of local things. I know, like the specific things where literally things fell through the cracks, like on Hopper Lane, where, you know, the sound walls, that was a big gap in terms of who responsibility to replace those things. So you've had some things happen on that, haven't you?
Yeah. So the Hopper Wall abut the sidewalk on Hopper Lane, and we call them the walls because the impression by everybody who lived up against them, and even in, you know, other places in the neighborhood, with those were sound walls. They were there. They were our impression that they were built by the city and to be maintained by the city. And there's a couple of reasons why. Is we found out that whenever there's graffiti there, someone would paint over it. So it's like, oh, the city's taking care of it. But it's actually a good Samaritan that lived in one of the neighborhoods that was doing it.
Oh, no.
unbeknownst to the rest of the neighborhood. I mean, which is awesome. I mean, that's much appreciated, but it caused some confusion after the fact that when the houses burned down, most people believed that to be the responsibility of the city. And so when they did the debris removal, nobody marked it to be demolished. Well, what ends up happening is we find out it wasn't really a sound wall. It's more of just a decorative fence at the back, and it's actually on the property line of those property owners. So it's treated no different than your typical wooden fence. You know, it's your responsibility to take it down, your responsibility to replace it as a homeowner.
Right.
So what we went out and did is we identified this as a project that we needed to get done, and we, you know, we got some printed press to follow up on it and to cover it, and kind of made it known. And one of the companies that did the debris removal was called Ashbrit, and they were looking for something to kind of give back to the community. And as they, you know, they came in here and did a bunch of work, and they were looking for something where they could say, you know, hey, this is something we can give back to make this community better. And they reached out to us, right about the same time as they reached out to the Rebuild North Bay Foundation. And we're talking within like hours. They asked the Rebuild North Bay Foundation, what, you know, where can we make a real difference? And they said, hey, you take a look at the Hopper Wall. And they asked us, you know, what's something that's going to cost them? We're like, the Hopper Wall, it's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this project done. They promised funding, and that was the first big break back in the spring. And then a couple weeks ago, we were very happy to hear that they would, we solidified the process and the funding where Ashbrit is going to do quite a bit amount of financial funding for this project, as well as supply the in-kind donations of some of the aspects that are needed, like the demo and debris removal and stuff like that. They got people to step in and do that free of charge. And so it amounts up to about $600,000.
Wow.
In costs that they're going to cover. And that allows us to rebuild the entirety, to demolish, dispose of, and rebuild the entire wall for all 40 people.
Wow, that's beautiful. That's people coming together. That's fabulous.
Yeah, because we did the math and it came out to being about roughly $18,000, a little over $18,000 per property to demolish and rebuild that wall.
Mm.
Back for like kind and quality.
So. Right. Well, that's a big chunk. My goodness. But now, through this process, you've become an activist. Obviously, you've seen a lot of other people become an activist through this process. What and who has surprised you through this process?
Within the organization, I mean, I'm very proud of pretty much everybody that's stepped up. We have people that are just advocates. We have people that are just want to volunteer. And we have people that are taking on responsibilities and being project managers for this community. Pretty remarkable to see the growth of some of these individuals that were very quiet, meek, and now they're outspoken and demand respect and accountability for the things that are going on in Coffee Park.
Out of tragedy, you hope for better things. From those ashes, there will be a much stronger community, I imagine, you hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just not in Coffee Park. I mean, in the entirety of Sonoma County, Santa Rosa and North, you've seen a lot of individuals that have really stepped up. You know, I think James Gore, as an elected official, has done a phenomenal job representing us and advocating for the people that burned out. The burnouts, as some people refer to ourselves as. He's done a phenomenal job. Mike McGuire, I'd like to say he's done a better job, but he's always been awesome. He's doing the same thing he's always done, which is representing us great and advocating us for us at the state level. I don't think he can do a better job than he has been doing. But there's even some individuals. You know, there's a guy named Brad in the Larkfield area, and another one named Mike that really in the Mark West Estates area that have really solidified themselves as like those community leaders up there. There's a few different ones. I'm going to forget names, I hope nobody gets offended, but there's another woman named Vita up in Hidden Valley area, which has got kind of a double meaning now. It's not just named Hidden Valley, but it's people forget that Hidden Valley, which is just below Fountain Grove, was really affected as well. And she's become a really outspoken person in terms of advocacy for the insurance side and grouping people together. You're going to see a whole lot of people that have really stepped up. Mayor Chris Corsi's done a phenomenal job of representing us. I know that he's taken some shots and gotten a lot of stress because of it, and that's some of the reason why he's not choosing to run for re-election. But he's done a phenomenal job. In my opinion, there's some staff within the planning and development department that has been outstanding. The ones we deal with on a regular basis, because we do have regular meetings, Coffee Strong does, with the City of Santa Rosa's Planning and Development Department. Gabe Osborne and David Gouin and Steve Jensen specifically have been outstanding in helping us and getting us the answers we need and really advocating for us in terms of getting policy passed at the city level, whether it be, a new resolution to help lighten the load of some homeowners or help them rebuild easier. They've done a phenomenal job.
That's good to hear that people have stepped up. That's, as you have. And perhaps give everyone your contact information if they want more information about the group and what's happening.
Yeah, you can go Facebook, Coffee Strong, we're on there, or you can go to coffeestrong.com, which is our website, which has a bunch of resources. You can email me at jeff@coffeestrong.com. And we're always happy to help anybody or answer any questions. As a matter of fact, I'm discussing going up to Reading next week to see if we can help out up there and try to put an event together. If you just kind of give them a little overview of what to expect in the next 2 to 3 months so that they can hopefully learn from our trials, tribulations, mistakes, and successes.
Exactly. Don't have to reinvent the wheel on it.
Yes.
So any other milestones coming up specifically in the rebuild?
We're still working on some projects. We are in the process of redesigning the park and getting funding together with that, as well as continuing to work on the Hopper Wall project. One thing we did get that was awesome was the people from APM Homes, Synergy, Gallagher Home, and Tuxhorn Homes are financing the rebuild of what, for us, what is the famous Coffee Park sign. It's a redwood sign that's kind of carved out that says Coffee Park that was there since the beginning. And so they financed that. So that's another milestone.
Oh, great.
And,
yeah.
You know, we're still going. I think in the next month you'll see the 500th home under construction out there.
Wow. Oh, that's a lot nicer than since I last talked to you. That is improving.
Absolutely.
Well, I most appreciate the update, Jeff Upkrepke of Coffee Strong. Great work, and it just shows you what, again, individuals and when they get together, look what happens. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. And you know, I may be just the president of this organization, but we wouldn't be as effective as we are if it weren't for all the volunteers for us. And it really is a community coming together, both in Coffee Park and Sonoma County.
Exactly. It's everywhere. Well, I really appreciate your work, and we'll check in again and hopefully talk about some other great things that are happening.
All right,
Coffee
I appreciate
Park.
It. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for calling in. Okay, good luck.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.